Good afternoon. Welcome to the weekly edition of The Wrap. I'm Laura Leslie, WRAL Capital Bureau Chief.
And I'm WRAL State Government Reporter Travis Fain.
So this week started off with a fight over who will and will not be on the ballot in November. This is such a crazy story. I know we've covered this quite a bit, and probably you've read some of our coverage on NC Capitol, but the Green Party has been trying to get on the ballot, and they had been sort of put on hold pending an investigation into what was alleged signature fraud, which it sounds like the Board of Elections is still alleging. But they decided that after an investigation of some weeks that they do have enough signatures to get them on the ballot, except now it's too late to get them on the ballot.
Yeah, so there was some fraud apparently, but not enough to get you below the threshold you have to have to be on the ballot. Look, I think, you know, there's a federal lawsuit that the Green Party filed. And I would rather expect the judge to get involved here if the State Board of Elections says, all right, we're willing to move forward with the steps that it takes to get them on the ballot. We've just missed this deadline. That seems like the kind of thing that a federal judge can get them around, or B, the state legislature can get them around. They're not going to be in session. I mean, we're getting close to, I think August 17th is when they print the ballots. And I don't think they're in session, even for these little, you know, look-in sessions where they don't do anything before then. But it just seems like there are fixes here if people agree, as the Board of Elections now seems to, that this party can be on the ballot.
But not everybody agrees, right? So now we have the Democratic Party going to court in state court to try to keep the Green Party off the ballot. And their argument is because there was fraud and because that investigation is still ongoing, that they have lost their right to be on the ballot this fall. And as you and I have commented before, you know, being the party of democracy, but trying to keep people off the ballot is a complicated look, I guess, is one way to put that.
Right, particularly when, you know, the Mark Elias's firm, a big-time Democratic national attorney, they were clearly trying to poke holes in the Green Party's petitions. And at the same time that was happening, people were calling people who signed these Green Party petitions saying, hey, are you sure you signed these things? And claiming that they were calling from the Green Party itself, which, you know, for those of you scoring at home, is lying. So a lot of kind of dirty hands here in this, trying to get just like a little bit of advantage in our U.S. Senate race. Because, I mean, you know, what are we talking, 10,000 votes maximum, I'm guessing, for a Green Party Senate candidate, if that.
So we're still waiting to see what the judges come up with on that, right? That's Monday?
I don't know the timing on that. There's a federal lawsuit and, of course, a state lawsuit, and I'm just not sure how and when that's all going to play out.
In the meantime, we covered a lot of stuff this week. Brian Murphy, our colleague, our sports investigative reporter, had a great story on sports gambling this week.
Yeah. Basically, it boils down to teams, professional sports teams in the state are just stepping up that pressure on lawmakers after we all thought sports gambling was going to pass earlier this year and it didn't. They're going from, hey, wouldn't this be nice, to, hey, you really need to do this. We are at a competitive disadvantage without the gambling that we can tack on as a soccer business to our sporting venues. And let me just say, Laura, that can you imagine a world where the Charlotte Hornets and Charlotte Panthers are not competitive? I don't want to live in that world. Obviously, those are two stalwarts of I'm from Georgia, by the way. If I haven't mentioned
it. Rub it in. Look, let's not handicap them any more than they already deal with, right?
That's a good point. And I think that's roughly the argument that they're making to state legislators is, here, all these other teams are getting this. We need this revenue. We need these improvements to our sporting venues.
In the meantime, the election march continues apace. We know that we are going to be Monday is going to be 3 months from Election Day. Isn't that crazy? It seems like it's further off, but it's really not.
It's here.
It's coming up. So Beasley is up on the air now with a couple of good ads. One of them has to do with capping the price of insulin. And the other one I saw is ban members of Congress from trading stocks.
Yeah, and that's probably an issue that's going to play fairly well. Maybe not with Democratic leadership in the House, at least. But that's a kind of a good populist message, I would think, even for a Democrat. Now, I did see I think she says in that ad that she doesn't take corporate PAC donations, which may be like technically true, but there are all these little pass-through organizations that you can get money from. And I saw the NRSC pushing back on that today, saying, hey, what about this money that doesn't come technically from a corporate PAC, but it flows from a corporate PAC through another entity to the Beasley campaign.
That's one of the many ways that it is difficult for us to track money
Yeah.
in the business. That is for sure. And every time we think we've got a handle on it, they come up with another loophole. So, in the meantime, so you've been looking at whether or not we're going to see any debates in the Senate race. We did not see any debates in the Republican primary, right?
That's right. That's right. And I don't know that we're going to see any a Beasley Bud debate in the general. I mean, like you said, we're 3 months out. Nothing is on the books. Nothing is scheduled. I talked to Ted Budd's spokesman today, and I'll just be, he says, quote, we will probably start reviewing all the invitations toward the end of the month and decide what direction we're going to go. So no promise there to for Ted Budd, who did not want to debate in the in the Republican primary. I mean, I should say there were debates in the Republican primary. Ted Budd, the ultimate winner of that primary, simply did not participate in them. So the front runner just said, nah, no, thank you. And I'm wondering if he will do that again here in the general election.
Well, at least, well, we have other candidates that could debate, I suppose. So, I
May or
guess
may not be a Green Party candidate willing
may
to
or may
debate.
not, we don't know yet. An interesting story that I was following this week was sort of the fallout from that vote in Kansas on whether or not to keep the right to abortion in the state constitution. And I think, this is one that I think a lot of people had expected that Kansas, being more Republican than North Carolina, I mean, more conservative for sure. And expected that might actually pass to remove that protection from the Constitution, which would allow state lawmakers to start limiting abortion access or banning it completely. But it was an overwhelming vote. It was a 19-point margin. Voters there said that they wanted to keep that right in their Constitution. That really surprised a lot of people, especially if you think about the fact that they put it in August, for heaven's sake. I mean, who has an election in August, right? And then on top of that, it was really strangely worded, and there were some efforts sort of afoot to give people the wrong information about which way to vote. And nonetheless, despite all of that, they had the same sort of level of turnout that they've seen for like general elections with a governor on the ballot.
Yeah, and I continue to think abortion is an issue that's going to drive turnout in November. Shout out to all the people who kind of made their decisions about what the November elections would look like in March. I think you made a mistake. I mean, it's probably still too early to say what you think it's going to look like. I mean, think about all the kind of positive news for Democrats in the last week or so. They seem to be getting their act together to move things through Congress. Gas still very expensive, but it has come down. The economy, we had a very positive jobs report today. So, I mean, think about what you knew 3 months ago. Think about what you think you know now, and think about what you're going to know on is it November 8th, I think that the election is.
It is November
So,
8th. Yeah.
we got miles to go before we sleep. But I think abortion is just really going to be an animating issue, certainly for both sides, but probably more for Democrats than for Republicans, and it could wipe out some of this red tide that we kind of the general wisdom has been expecting this November.
Right. I mean, I was talking to David McLennan about it this week, and him and other people that I spoke to, he, I should say, and other people that I spoke to kind of all agree they don't think this is going to result in the flipping of the state house or senate or anything along those lines. Sorry about that. They don't think that's going to happen, but they do think that it may manage to hold off the super majority that Republicans are hoping to gain in the state legislature, because a lot of those pickup seats that they're going to need are in swing districts, right? And they're in a lot of them are sort of suburban or shoulder districts, and they've got a lot of women voters. And I mean, I guess I have thought for a while that pundits were maybe underestimating the force of the abortion issue with women, because as a woman, I have a lot of women friends. The women I know are mad. I mean, they're not happy about this. Even if they would never have an abortion, they're not happy about being told what they can and can't do with their body. Right? Now, is that going to be enough to power them to the ballot box in November? I don't know. But women stay mad for a long time, right? And
No.
I'm making that joke as a woman, so it's okay. I can say that.
I'm not touching that. I'm not involved in that
Yeah,
analysis.
I'm just saying, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. As you say, there could be, who knows what's going to happen before November. But I do think that the vote in Kansas definitely showed that maybe that issue has a little bit more a draw than maybe some had given it credit for.
I think that makes sense. Meanwhile, looking at kind of the national landscape, Brian Anderson and Andy Spay at WRL had a good piece this week. Looking at the DGA, the Democratic Governors Association, which Governor Roy Cooper heads, along with the DCCC, kind of boosting far-right GOP candidates who've embraced conspiracy theories, kind of running reverse psychology ads about how terrible Democrats think they are, trying to get Republicans to pick them in primaries around the country, on the thinking that, hey, this will be an easier person for a Democrat to beat in November. I mean,
This seems like it could go sideways in a lot of different ways.
careful what you wish for. I mean, it is amazing the ability of Democrats here to take the worst things about their opponents and turn it into a criticism of themselves.
That's a level of mental gymnastics that I had not contemplated before.
And Brian asked the governor about it on Tuesday. He really didn't want to get into the strategy, but again, he is head of the DGA, chairman of the Democratic Governors Association. He said that the association is, quote, investing in educating the public about issues that are concerning to them. It is a strategy. It's not all that unusual of a strategy.
I was going to say, remember when Democrats in 2016 were so excited to see Trump win because they figured they were going to beat him?
That occurred to me as well. Yeah. How'd that work out? I have a very short memory.
In the meantime, you and Sarah Kruger collaborated on a really great story this week about a law that goes way back to 2013. I think that's right, about guns and what sheriffs are allowed to do with them.
Yep, 2013, the legislature passed a law that basically said unless a gun that is seized in a crime is defective in some way or doesn't have a serial number, you can't destroy it. You need to, once you're done with it as evidence, sell it. That would typically be to a pawn shop, to a firearms dealer of some kind, but I mean, it's a used gun. So, think about where it's going to go. It's going to go to a pawn shop. And a lot of police chiefs in urban areas don't want to do that because they feel like, well, this gun's just going to be used in another crime. So they're holding on to it so much so that they're running out of space to store these things. They want the legislature to change the law. I don't know that there's any real, appetite to do that. I talked to John Faircloth, former police chief in High Point, who was also a sponsor of the bill back in 2013. He said, yeah, we'll look at it. But I also talked to the Speaker of the House, and he did not seem to indicate that that was something that was going to move forward. But we shall see. Grassroots North Carolina, which is, I dare, I they're to the right of the NRA, I think, on
Oh,
guns.
yes.
They are vehemently against changing this. They pushed for the law and they have lobbied to keep the law whenever, Marsha Morey, Representative Marsha Morey out of Durham, has tried to change this law before because Durham is one of the cities that wants it changed, and it hasn't gone anywhere. Grassroots North Carolina has really pushed back against that. So I think that will probably continue, but I would definitely recommend that story to folks.
Very interesting. And there's another update coming tonight. I won't say what it is, but tune in at 6 o'clock tonight, or check online if it's after 6 o'clock Friday when you hear this. So in the meantime, we're still waiting to see what's going to happen with Medicaid expansion, right? And sort of, the hospitals are really sort of getting a lot of heat, right? Because I think Senate Leader Berger had an op-ed, didn't he, taking aim at hospitals?
Pat Ryan, his former comms
Former,
director, had an
right,
op-ed. And
sorry.
then Berger basically said, I believe he just told reporters, I don't think it was an op-ed, that, hospitals are the reason we haven't expanded Medicaid. They're standing in the way. And then Governor Cooper had an op-ed in the NNO Tuesday of this week, I believe, making a very similar argument, basically saying
So,
hospitals are putting profits above expansion.
yeah, so they're kind of getting it from all sides. Well, they came back today with a full-page newspaper ad is running around the state, defending themselves essentially, and saying what their issues are with some of the proposals that have been floated, especially by the Senate.
And they sent a letter to Berger and Moore, the Speaker of the House, and the governor, saying, look, you need to just pass clean Medicaid expansion. Don't pair it with CON reform, certificate of need reform, which would increase competition in the hospital sector. Hospitals basically say, look, We got emergency rooms, other things that don't, you're not profit centers. They're very expensive. They have to be subsidized. So don't let some surgery center open up down the street, or an MRI open up down the street doing these kind of lucrative things that we depend on to subsidize other things in hospitals. The certificate of need allows them to block those expansions, and they want to continue to be able to do that. The Senate has made that a prerequisite to pass Medicaid expansion. So yeah, I hope I get to a point someday where I can afford newspaper ads to tell people I don't have enough money for something. They are saying, among other things, that they are in the worst financial scenario of their careers, hospitals are, and that Medicaid expansion should not come with strings attached that would jeopardize the future for hospitals. That's from the letter they sent the speaker and the governor and the pro tem over in the Senate.
Sorry about the noises. We just moved over to Teams, and I have nonstop Teams messages, so I apologize for all the little noises coming from my computer.
Yeah, reach out, y'all, if you know how to turn off the notifications in Teams.
Would be great. You'll save our sanity. Okay, so other stories that we've been following for a while. Thomas Stith. We know that he basically has departed from the community college system. But you've been trying to find out how much his severance package was for.
Yeah, he was kind of asked to leave and resigned, I think Monday of last week that was finalized. When that happens, when it's a big time state agency head who leaves, we just say, hey, tell us what the severance package is. And someone hands us a piece of paper. I had never had it be something I had to fight for. Well, it's been a week and a half. They won't give it to me, or at least they haven't given it to me. Yesterday, I took the very unusual step of reaching out to all board members, all the community college board members whose emails were on the website, saying, hey, can someone get back with me here? Still haven't seen it. I don't know what they're hiding or if there is anything to hide, but they won't say what his severance package is as of 2:09 p.m. Friday afternoon, August 5th. So, when I get it, I'll write about it.
Another big debate that's been happening this week, that Emily Walkenhorst has been covering for us in the education area, teacher pay and how that's all going to work. We had Kathy Truitt, the DPI superintendent, and also the head of the state school board, Davis, both arguing for sort of a reconfiguration of the way that teachers get paid that critics of the idea say amounts to performance pay. And so a lot of folks are sharply critical of this plan, but Truitt and Davis seem to think that it will help to counter, the drastic teacher shortages that they and well, the state and every other state in the country, apparently, according to the Washington Post, basically everybody's got problems with teacher shortages, and North Carolina's happens to be pretty bad.
Yeah, and it would really be a big overhaul of the way we pay teachers from my understanding, going from kind of this experience-based model to something that is either merit pay or very close to it. Emily texts to say that the State Board of Education plans to wrap up its review of this proposal with final recommendations to State Board of Education committees later this month. So that is a debate that is quickly becoming very ripe.
In the meantime, I'm just checking notes here.
I
You've
got a
got a
Medicaid story this weekend that I will.
Columbus.
Yeah. It's about Medicaid transformation. It should drop Sunday morning on WRAL.com, NCCapital.com. And it's basically, and I'm not the first to write about this. Rose Hoven's outfit, NC Health News, has written about it. WCNC in Charlotte has written about it. But there are all these providers. When we move to Medicaid managed care, where we said instead of just straight up Medicaid, we're going to have insurance companies, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and four others, manage most of state of North Carolina Medicaid. It became much more complicated for doctors and others who bill Medicaid to bill them. Instead of one system, now they got to know six because there's the state and then there's these five insurance companies. A lot of delayed billings. I mean, I've had people tell me they were considering selling their home, considering declaring bankruptcy because they could not shake money loose from these insurance companies. That seems to be improving. The state seems to be cracking down on it. But I recommend that story to y'all on Sunday.
Wow, I did not heard about that. That sounds like it's going to be a good one. One quick thing to note, which is that it looks like Representative Bobby Hoenig, who is running for Senate, of course, May end up in the Senate before November by virtue of being the replacement for Senator Bob Steinberg. And I think Senator Steinberg decided to go ahead and resign to speed up the cooling off period before he can become a lobbyist. Is that correct?
Yeah, he lost his primary. He was double bunked with Senator Norm Sanderson, lost that primary. Looks like he's going to become a lobbyist. And the local Republicans in that district, this is per the, is it Chowan?
Chowan Harold, yeah.
Forgive me for not knowing how to pronounce all the counties. Their local newspaper, The Herald, says that Republicans will meet August 18th in Edenton to name Steinberg's replacement, but it sounds like it's Hoenig's job to lose.
Generally, that wouldn't be surprising. So.
Right, right.
Anything else that we should have mentioned?
I think that's it for me. I don't have a lot to tell y'all about next week. No session. You know, the next like little look-in session is Tuesday, August 23rd. Don't know of any, you know, anything queued up for that either, but just I will keep plugging along through this summer.
That's right. And then check back with us next week to figure out what's going on with the Green Party. That is, if anybody knows by then.